I am an alcoholic. My name's Buck Melton. Hi, everybody. And it's good to be here sober at Monique. Look back at Jim with his clothes. He's all dressed up last night. Let me get this coat off here. Cry, Jim. Put a little color in this morning, you know. Yeah, Debbie started off with that pretty red dress on Friday night, and I thought, you wait till Sunday morning. I'll show myself. But it's good to be here sober. And you know, by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink in 14 days, 7 months, and 17 years. And I owe it to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to a God that I understand a little bit today. And I don't have any jokes to tell. But you know, Sunday morning meetings kind of get to me in here, and it's good. So I know I've heard a lot of dirty stories, but I ain't going to tell them. Don't want to kill no dogs this morning either. But I don't know why I'm here. And I was born on a cotton farm down in Union County there in North Carolina. And there was never any liquor in our home. I didn't know anything at all about people that drank liquor. My dad was a good man. He didn't drink, but he was not a church man. And there were 6 of us boys and 1 girl, and I ended up the drunk in the family. But my mother, every time the doors opened in that little Methodist church, we went there. And you know, I thought that's the only place that God was that little church out there in the country. And I enjoyed it. It was good. I enjoyed going to church, but it got us off of the farm. And when you work in the cotton field from daylight till dark, you know, on Sunday, it was good to go to church. And I enjoyed it. And my dad wanted us kids to all have education. He didn't have any education, and he bought this farm up there, and he said, you boys going to school and get you a good education. And they all did, till I come along. And I run away from home when I was 15 and a half years old, and I got a good education running around with a bunch of cab drivers. And, on West Trade Street there in Charlotte. I ended up a cab driver, you know, and drove a cab for a while after I was married. And I know one time I was down on Vivard Street there, and there's a fight in the place, and this woman come out, and they done tore her clothes off, and she just jumped in the cab, and I never helped old Virginia about this. And, she was wanting to go way out in the country there, and I said, well, hey, you ain't got no purse. How you going to pay your fare? And she says, well, won't this cover it? And I looked back. I said, my God, ain't you got something? Got something a little smaller, you know. I've done, like most alkies, done a little bit of everything. But I ended up in Charlotte that morning and went out and got me a room, got rid of my blue bib overhauls, and I thought, you know, everything's going to be all right now. And it was for a while. I went up the street that day looking for a job, and I walked in a restaurant right across from the old Southern Depot there and asked the man about a job, and he said, well, I need somebody, but you have to be 16 to work here. And I didn't even bat my eye. I said, I'm 16 and a half. And he said, well, you come on in at 3 o'clock. I said, go by the office over there and pick up your permit and come on in here at 3 o'clock, and I'll put you to work. And I went over and got my permit, and coming back, I kept thinking, you know, this my first day out here on my own, and I'm lying about this thing. And that thing bothered me. It didn't bother me enough to tell the truth, but it really bothered me. And so that evening at 3 o'clock, I went to work with an old boy named Owen Pruitt. And everybody that walked in the place liked Pruitt. He was just a nice guy, and the women was crazy about him. You people read about him in 1959. He fell out of that Piedmont airline over Shelby, North Carolina. He went to the bathroom. He was on his 6th honeymoon. I think he had a drinking problem, too. But he went to thought he was going to the bathroom to take a drink, and he opened the door, and they just zoop, and out he went. You can't open my airline door from the inside now. That's the way Pruitt died. But I liked him. And that night when we closed the shop, Pruitt says, "Buck, would you like a drink?" And I said, "Man, I sure would." You know, I thought he was talking about a Pepsi Cola. And Ellie come back in the kitchen. He had a pint of whiskey and two glasses and a Coca-Cola. And he took the top off and handed it to me. He said, "Pour you on." And so I poured a tumbler about half full. And he said, "Don't you want some Coke?" And I said, "No, I drank mine like this." So I turned that glass. Well, you know, I never had drunk no liquor starting off that way. So I turned that glass of whiskey up, and I took about two good swallows. And I sneezed, and liquor come out of my ears, eyes, and nose. And there was nothing exciting about my first drink of liquor. It just messed me up right from the start. And they took me on down to my little room that night. And the next morning, I got up. And I don't remember the day about feeling bad or anything. I got up and walked the street to Charlotte and looked the buildings over that day and went back to work at 3 o'clock that evening. And there was an old cab stand right beside the place there. It picked up people from the depot. And all these cab drivers come in, and they'd kid at me and having fun out of me. And it was good for me. I liked it. And that night when we closed the shop, one of them said, "Buck, how about coming and riding with me, and I'll show you this town tonight." And I said, "Okay." So I crawled in the cab with him the way we went, and he picked up a couple of fares, and he pulled in a little old place, bootlegging joint. Now, our state's been dry up just not too many years ago, but the wettest dry state you've ever been to. But he said, let's go in and have a little drink. And I said, "Okay." Well, you know, that first drink, I did learn one thing about it. You just put a little bit of liquor in there and a whole lot of Coke. And so we went in and had a couple of drinks and come back out, and he said, "Let's go pick up some girls." And hell, you know, I done had two drinks of liquor. I'd have tackled a tiger then. I said, "Let's go." And so away we went and picked up some women. And I'd been in Charlotte 2 days and done experienced women in liquor. And hell, either one of them could have killed me, and almost did before I got to But that's, things went good, and I drank for the next 25 years and had fun. I wasn't an instant alcoholic. I worked on that thing hard. But I had fun drinking. I'd hate to think I drank for 25 years and didn't have a little bit of fun. So things went good. Drafted me in the Army. I never was too brave. And I went in and served my time. And I hear stories now. I wonder how in the world we ever won World War II. My God, you know. But I was a good soldier. I believe that. I soldiered well and didn't do too much drinking while I was in service. But orders come through. I was in the hospital in France, and orders come through for me to come back home. And I said, you know, I wasn't in love or nothing then, nothing to hurry back home about. So I just didn't report back to my outfit. I was in Paris, and I went into town, and I stayed there and drank and had fun for a week. Now, this was fun drinking. This wasn't alcoholic drinking. I was just having a good time. And I decided, well, I better check in with my outfit. Maybe they'll keep me here for 6 months. But I checked in with my outfit, and the next morning I flew out and come back to the States and ended up down at Fayetteville and got discharged at Fort Bragg and come on back down the country to spend the night with my mother and dad, and never went to their home drinking, not even in my last days. Now, I went there hungover a lot, but and I used to say I was afraid to, but I wasn't. I think I had too much respect to go there drinking. And so the next day I come on back to Charlotte and stopped by the place I'd worked at, and the man wanted me to go to work, and he turned the shop over to me. And that's when I met my excuse that night for the next 20 years of drinking. You heard her yesterday. And this old gal come walking in, tall and lanky. She's done spread out. She told the truth about that a lot yesterday. But she, and still a good-looking woman, but she was a pretty woman. And we got to talking, and so she left and been gone a few minutes, and the telephone rang. Now, this is how bold that woman was. I didn't have a damn chance. I wasn't going to say that. I didn't have a chance from the start with her. She'd been gone a few minutes, and the telephone rang, and she said, "How about taking me home?" And I said, "Okay." I said, "Where are you at?" And she said, "You don't even know who this is." And I did know who it was. I said, "You that old, long, tall, lanky gal that was in here I was talking to a while ago." And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, where are you?" And she said, "I'm at home." I said, "Well, I'll be down there in a little bit." She told me where she lived. I said, "Quick as I close up, I'll come on down." And we did, and we had to sit on the front porch. She wouldn't even let me in the house that night. We sat out there in an old swing on the front porch. You know, somebody wrote a song about that not long ago. Court didn't swing. But that's the way we started off. The next day she come out of the shop and I was running and wanted to know if we were going out that night. And I said, no, I do a little drinking. And you know, everything was dry and you don't take your date down to the juke joints the first night. I said, but I'll talk to you later. I'm going to go down to a little drinking night and see some of my old buddies. And she said, all right. And she left. And that night at 12 o'clock, I was locking up the place and I looked over and she was parked right in front of the place. And I thought, well, did she not hear me? And I decided I'd walk over and see what was going on. And I walked over to the car, and she had 12 bottles of this old long neck beer sitting up on the front seat. And I think I knew that was my woman right then. I crawled in, and we fell in love. That's the way things went for the next 10 to 12 years. We had fun. We drank together and run around, and we were in love. We were married within a year, bought us a home, and our first daughter come along. Another year, another girl come along, and I was telling them this morning, we got 3 daughters. That's the way I learned to dance. Stand that damn bathroom door, you know. You don't stand a chance. Things were going good. We were both working hard and wasn't making any money, but everything was all right. You know, and we got along good. You get 2 young people in love, it don't take a hell of a lot of money to get along. And that's the way things went with us. We drank maybe once a month, 2 or 3 couples out in the neighborhood would get together, and we'd go out on a Saturday night and buy a quart of liquor. You ain't going to get in a bunch of trouble drinking 2 or 3 of you drinking out of a quart of liquor. And so I wasn't having any problems then. But I had a chance to move to this little Baptist town down in South Carolina and go in business for ourselves. And we did. And the first year we were there, made more money than I ever thought about making. And things went good. And that's when I joined all them clubs, you know, and she was running the place. And I had the money to do what I wanted to. And I ain't looking back on it. I crossed over that line just like that. Was in trouble. And from then until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I quit 2 times that I know of. But on one of these trips back home, she was pregnant, got pregnant, and I never crossed my mind that I ought to come back and run this place, let her go home and take care of herself. I was so busy gambling and drinking liquor that I just didn't have time for that. But I come in one evening and she said, Buck, looks like you're going to have to run this place so I can go home and take care of myself till this child is born. And I felt bad about it. I said, you get your things together and get out of here and I'll run this place. And she got her things together and she left. And I went to work and I didn't drink anything that evening. I went home that night and I rolled and tumbled and couldn't sleep and didn't know that I needed to drink a liquor. See, I never had tried to quit. And when you've been drinking for years and just try to quit cold turkey, brother, you're in trouble. The next morning, I got up and went out and opened that business up. Had a house full of people, and everything was going good except me. And I couldn't get over those hot stoves and put out the food and run the shop like I'd been doing. And I got all aggravated, and up until this time, I'd always liked myself. But I thought, you know, hell, life ain't worth living. No, boy, you ain't doing too good. And I run everybody in the place out and closed it down. And sat down and I wrote a note and I thought, you know, hell, that just ain't worth it. And I was going to end it all. And I had a .38 in my pocket and I walked back in the stock room. And I don't think I've ever been more insincere than I was that morning to get it over with. And there was a quart of gin sitting there on the shelf. And I grabbed that bottle of gin and drank every swallow I could hold out of it. And you know, about 10 minutes, I thought, wasn't that the silliest damn thing you ever thought about? There's some of this leftover water. That's good for her. And you know, I didn't quit drinking anymore. I knew then what I could do when I got to hurting bad enough. I took her to the hospital for our last daughter to be born. Drunk, and never did go back to get her. These things I don't like to talk about, but I better never forget about them. She come home in an ambulance and be drunk. And this business that we'd had was doing real good. And my hip, they began to not want to work for a drunk, and they'll quit you. And so I had a brother there in this town. I asked him, he and his wife would like to have this business. And I put them in business, and they done very well. They retired about 15 years ago, with living down in Florida in the winter and up in the mountains in the summer. And I resented every damn bit of it. I'll tell you, I did. I thought it ought to have been mine. It was, but I drank it up. But I'd get an old service station building and put me a drink box out front, a poker table, and a dice table in the back. And that's the way things went. And I'd move, get too hot on one side of town, I'd go the other side. And just being the sheriff there in that town, and I want to tell this, when I first went to that town in South Carolina and been there for a few years and was doing pretty well, the citizens there come to me and wanted me to be run for their sheriff. Now, I'd have made them a dandy before my term had been out if I'd have run, I'll tell you that. But that's how quick things changed for me. And me and this sheriff was good friends. And he come out one day and he said, Buck, we got the federal man here in town, and said he's looking for people selling liquor. He said, now I know it don't concern you, but I just thought I'd tell you about it. And he left, and 2 hours later he was back out there, had two warrants. I'd already sold the federal man two bottles after he'd come told me about it. And so I didn't listen to nobody. But I run around that town, and we had made some money and saved. Virginia had saved it. I never did save any. And I was gambling it full time at this time. Met a little boy out of Louisiana. Had taught me some tricks. It was the best I'd ever seen with a deck of cards. And that's the way we drifted around and picked up money. You know, that easy come, easy go, and I never did keep any of it. And since I want to say this, you know, every once in a while, and I was glad to see that on the flyer, there's no gambling here at this retreat. Thank goodness for that. A lot of places I go to, they say, come on up now. We got a good, honest game of poker. AA poker going on. We want you to get that in. I said, hell, man, don't invite me in there. It might be honest, but when a greenback hits that table, old Buck gets dishonest as hell. So I ain't never played no poker since then. Never turned a card since I come to AA, and don't intend to. But we had saved up some money, and after one of the clubs that I'd made and stole and spent a lot of money at, they needed somebody to run the bar room, the game room out there. Now, that's a Jim Dandy job for a drunk. And I went out and run this club and made them some money, too. And one Sunday morning, I woke up out there and on the couch, and I called Virginia and asked her to come out there and call the manager of the club and told him I had to talk to him. And he got out there and wanted to know what was going on. And I said, the people that's hanging around this club has caused me to drink, and I'm going to quit. And, you know, I really felt like it was them. You know, I don't hang around people drinking today, so I don't know if that was a good move or a bad move. But he tried to get me to take off 2 months and said, we'll pay you and come on back. He said, you've made us more money than anybody's ever been here. And I said, no, I'm quitting. And we checked out. I checked out that Sunday morning, went home. 2 or 3 weeks passed, and I told Virginia, I said, you know, if I open up a real nice restaurant down here on Main Street in this little Baptist town, I wouldn't drink, I wouldn't sell any beer and wine, and we'd get all the church people to come doing business with us, and we could make some money and get back on our feet. And, you know, and I felt like we could. But when you've been in their jails for bootlegging and fighting and drug out of places and expect the church people to come do business with you, damn, if you won't starve to death waiting on them. And so I didn't do any business there. And so one morning, that's when I left in October that time. I went down to open that place up, and I just said, to hell with it. I hung a lock back in the door, and I left. And sold that place of business for $1,000 in the pool room down there. There's a lot of good business takes action in the pool room. And I sold this business for $1,000, and we paid more than that. And I mean fully stocked equipment and everything. Paid more than that for the little sign hanging over the door. And when I come home that Christmas Eve, I'd already spent that $1,000. And, you know, and she had the bed loaded, so I didn't have too much say-so about that deal. I would just need a place to lay down that night. And so we ended up back in Charlotte. And when you see somebody moving on the 4th of July or Thanksgiving or Christmas, you can just about bet there's a problem, folks. Well, that ain't a good day to that ain't a good day to move, and especially when you're crossing the state line, you want to hurry it up, too. But we moved back there, and that was one sad Christmas for me. Now, kids laugh about it, but they'd already done something. And I thought then, you know, I'll just quit forever again. And on Monday morning, I got ready to go down to get that, ask for that job. And on the way down, I was going to stop at the place where I'd gone, had worked at before. And I thought, my God, he knows I'm a drunk and he won't hire me. See, I knew I was a drunk then. Sort of like old boy had a flat tire up home and he saw a light away up the hill. He had a spare tire, but he didn't have no jack. And he started walking up the road and said, well, that man won't loan me his jack, me drunk. He kept talking to himself and finally got there and knocked on the door. And the fella come to the door and said, yes, sir, can I help you? He said, I didn't want to buy your damn jack no way. And he go and just turn around and walk back. and I just knew this fella wouldn't hire me. And I know when I went to make some amends, he told me he would have. But I went out and I took a job working for a brick contractor, mixing mortar and pushing brick, and he paid me $1 an hour. This is in January 1959, folks, and brother, that was a cold January. And I said then, if I ever made another dollar, brother, I'd hold on to a little bit of it. I'll tell you, that was rough going. And that's when I found out, and they paid me every day too, but there was days I didn't work, and that's when I found out that I could get substitutes. Now, I had drank from the top shelf to the bottom, and I found out for 39 cents I'd get me a little bottle of turpentine with codeine in it, and it done the same thing for me at VO and Canadian Club did. And I don't recommend that for nobody, but that's what I was willing to do. It, when I knew there was help, just to swallow away, I'd take it, and I drank it. And so one evening, this boy I was working with, he was out there hauling brick, and he said, Buck, there's a little beer joint down here on the river for sale. Said, you ought to go down and look into it. Said, you've been in the restaurant and lounge business. And so that evening, I don't know why we went. I didn't have $10 to my name. We drove down there and had us a couple of beers and looked the place over, and I got to thinking, now, this brother I put in business, he's made a lot of money, and I just know he'd like to help me. So the next morning, I got up and didn't drink anything. And I went back down to South Carolina and went in and told him a whole lot of the lies and a little bit of the truth about what a nice place it was. And he said, well, I really hope you can get it, Buck. Said, you've made a mess out of your life. And I said, well, the reason I'm down here is to borrow the money from you to buy it with. And he didn't hesitate a minute. He said, Buck, anybody's made the money you've made and throwed it away and hadn't taken care of your family, said, I wouldn't let you have a damn nickel. And all I wanted to do was just get up and get out. And I got up and started to walk out, and he said, if you ever decide to do anything about your drinking, said, I'll put you in any kind of business you want to go ahead and help you in any way that I can. And you know, I just told him, I said, I don't think I'll ever take another drink of liquor as long as I live. That's what any good alky does. And he pulled the money out, and I didn't have to sign a thing. Counted me out the cash money, that was a mistake, and wished me well. But you know, and I was really tickled to death about that, and I thought that was a great thing, and my brother had helped me that way. But from the time I left him, before I got to my car, I got to think about the way he had talked to me about my drinking. And I said, the hell with him. And I went to the liquor store and cussed him for 70 miles back to Charlotte. And if I ever needed Alcoholics Anonymous in my life, my God, did I need it then. And I had never heard of AA at this time. So I went on back and got this place, and things did get a little bit better. Virginia and I, she had a good job. But she done quit paying my bills. And she used to come give me her check every week. I don't know, that's for Al-Anon too. She quit doing that, but she quit giving me her check then. But went on back and got this place, and things did get better. And one day a gentleman walked in, and I could feel him looking at me, and he said, I just bought a motel up here. And he said, you look like you'd make a good manager. And I said, well, I got this restaurant here, the beer joint is what it was, but I said, I got this restaurant here. He said, well, you just look like you'd make a good manager. I said, I got a wife and three children. He said, we got nice living quarters. He said, talk it over with your wife, and if you're interested, meet me at 8 o'clock up there at the motel. Well, you know, I'd lay around these motels drunk, and I knew that was a good job. And I told him I'd think about it. I thought about it. The door slammed behind him, and I got on the telephone not to call Virginia. I said, we're going to get that job. And sure enough, the next morning we went out there and talked to that man, and he hired me and paid me a whole lot more than I was ever worth. And for the next 4 years, my wife done a damn good job running that motel. But I got on a lot of things from then on out. But there used to be a place down on the river there, and a bunch of us guys would meet, and we'd go up behind the place there and sit and talk and tell lies and brag and all that stuff. You know how a bunch of drunks are. And we got to missing Percy. And we'd talk about him every once in a while. Have you seen Percy, you know? And they'd say, no, I wonder what's happened. Well, you know, in AA, they'll spend a dime and call. Well, we didn't. We just wondered. And so... One day I was at the house, and we had got back in business for ourselves. And we were back at the I was sitting there at the house one morning, and I saw Percy drive up, and he had a suit of clothes on, a white shirt, and I thought, my God, what has happened to Percy? I just knew he had religion. And he said, Buck, I want to talk to you. Do you have a cup of coffee? And I said, yeah. And come on in, and he started talking. I got him a cup of coffee and got me another drink. Now, I was drunk that morning. But I believe when we're ready, the seed will be planted. And he started talking, telling me about some people that helped me. And he said, you're going to lose your wife, and you're going to lose these kids, and you're going to lose this business. And I said, well, hell, I thought he was talking about a bank that's going to help me. I said, who are you talking about, Percy? And he said, that's who I needed to know about was a bank. And he said, it's a group called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, man, you go to hell. Now, you know, I had heard about AA somewhere, or I wouldn't have felt that way. But I wasn't ready until that day. Percy pushed his coffee back, and he got up, and he started to walk out, and he turned around, and he said, Buck, if you ever decide to do anything about your drinking, call Alcoholics Anonymous. We're listed in the telephone book. And he walked out. Now, he done exactly what he come to do that day. And from that day on, I that weekend, I could have listened to all 8 hours. They keep you in jail up for 8 hours when they put you in. I'd have been glad for him to come down to the jail and talk to me that weekend. But he didn't. And I was ashamed to call him back. I kept on drinking. And this is my last drunk, and I'm going to get this thing. I'm staying drunk too long. I always do. But the girl that was working for us missed the bus, and I told Virginia, I said, I'll be back in a little bit. She lived about 10 miles down the road, and I started to take her home, and I stopped and got me some more whiskey, and ended up back down on that river, walking and talking to myself, and wondering about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I couldn't get no answer, I did get drunk, but on the Thursday night, I ended up in a poker game, and I heard about this good game on Friday. They said there's a lot of money in it. And I went over there early Friday morning and asked the fellow about getting the game. He said, no, sir. I said, this is a private game. You don't get any of it. And I asked him if he'd like to have a little drink. And he said, yeah. And so I poured him a nice drink of that 100 proof Smirnoff. And I said, how about let's have a couple of games over here on the table, the pool table. And he said, okay. And we got over there and shot a few games. And I gave him a few dollars and asked him about another drink. And he said, yeah. And I poured him a nice big one. And I knew timing was about right, and I waited a few minutes. I said, you reckon I can get in that game tonight? He said, oh, hell yes, Buck, I know you're good at that. And so he said, I'll set you right in that game tonight. And so along about 6:30 or 7 o'clock that night, I was sitting there. I'd been drunk for 2 weeks now, hadn't been home. And I thought to myself, oh, boy, if you're going to get this money, you better lay off of that liquor. And so far as I know, that's the last glass of whiskey I took. That was September the 21st, 1967. I blacked out. I don't remember leaving that game. I know our minds worked good while we were in a blackout. I drove 75 or 80 miles, and I was down in the woods. And when I come to, I was scared to death and didn't know what I was afraid of. I had my pockets full of money and the car full of liquor and beer and didn't want to drink. And this was the first time in 25 years I had said a sincere prayer. Now, you know, you people, I ain't lying to you. You know when you're in jail, you're going to say a prayer. I'll guarantee you, but I mean a sincere prayer to God. And I prayed to a God that I knew about that night. I certainly didn't know him. And asked him to help me straighten my life out that night. The next morning when I got up, first thing I thought about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got in the car and I drove 70 miles back to Charlotte, pulled in the driveway, and the first thing, I hadn't even thought of an alibi or a lie to tell where I'd been, who I'd been with, and what I'd been doing. You know, you have to answer these things when you drink and go like I did. They want to know. And it hadn't even crossed my mind. I got out of the car and I walked in the house, and Virginia was sitting there, and she says, "Good morning, Bub." Well, now, we'd been married over 20 years, and when I've been on 2 weeks drunk, that woman ain't never said good morning, Buck. I'll tell you that. So God, as I understand God today, had was taking care of things, the stumbling blocks at our house. I got to believe that. And, you know, I was ashamed to tell her I wanted to do something about my drinking. There wasn't nothing mentioned about drinking or where I'd been or nothing that morning. But I didn't use the telephone in front of her. I was afraid she'd hear me. And after a while, she went in the other room, and I grabbed the telephone and I dialed the numbers. The first two A's are listed in the telephone book. And the little lady said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "I hope so. I want to do something about my drinking." And she said, "Are you able to drive?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Come on down to the 12-step club." And I went down to the club that morning. When I walked in, Betty said, "You must be booked." Now, I don't know how she could tell that I had been having drinking problems, you know. But she says, "You must be Buck." And I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "I want you to meet Jim." And this was a fine, well-dressed man there. And she forgot to tell me she was an alcoholic, and he forgot to tell me he was an alcoholic. And he said, "Do you want to do something about your drinking?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you want to go to a meeting tonight?" I said, "If that's what you do to quit drinking, I guess I do." He said, "You be here tonight at 7 o'clock, and I'll take you to meet." He thumped a dime down on the counter and said, "Give him a cup of coffee." And he walked out. And now, I had money in my pocket that day. I was lucky when I come to AA. It wasn't honest money, but I had a pocket full of it. And that dime didn't impress me a bit, but I know I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to drink that day. I drank that cup of coffee, and I walked out and got my car, and I went home. Got cleaned up, and at 7 o'clock that night, I was sitting in front of the club. Jim pulls up in the big Chrysler Imperial, and he said, "You ready to go?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Come on." I said, "I'll follow you, buddy." Now, I've hitchhiked back to Myrtle Beach two or three times, go down there with a bunch of drunks, and they leave you. And I sure wasn't going to no AA meeting with somebody I didn't know. Now, that's how much I knew about AA. And so I followed him over to the Queen City Group. I'm a member of the Queen City Group, good standing today. And when we pulled up in front of the church there, I saw old Hank standing out there. There's a man who runs a funeral home there in town. And in an ambulance service and everything, and I thought, my God, what is Hank doing here? You know, I knew I was sick, but my God, I wasn't ready for him. And but when I got out of the car, Hank come almost trotting back to me with a hand out, and I've always said that was the hand of AA. And he says, "Welcome, Buck." Said, "My name's Hank, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need you here." And that really made an impression on me. I walked on in the meeting that night, and a man got up, John Hoppy's dead today, got up and shared that night. It was the best AA talk I've ever heard in my life. I really identified with this man. And he talked about the things he had done and going back to his hometown and checking in a hotel in 2 weeks. He'd check out and go to the airport and never would see his mother and dad. And you know, I used to drive 50 miles down the country there. And I wasn't going to drink. I'd get up early in the morning, always go and before I started drinking. And I'd get to the little crossroad out there in the country before I'd get to their house. And I couldn't stand it. And I'd pull a bottle out from under my seat and I'd take me a drink. And I'd just turn around. Never the thoughts about going on to my mother and dad's. That was it. Turn around, drive 50 miles back to Charlotte. I said, "That's the same thing Jim doing down there in that hotel." And so I identified that night at that meeting. And I knew that I was an alcoholic. There's no doubt in my mind. When the meeting was over, this old boy had a lot of you know him, a yellow coat on with black striped checks and griddle big wide necktie. And I'd watched him sitting across from me. They had on patent leather shoes, and they was greased good, you know. And that's for men wore patent leather shoes. And he come over there and put his arm around me, and he said, "My name's Harry B., and I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "My name's Buck, and I picked up that desire chip a while ago." He said, "Buck, I love you." And that just scared me to death. I thought, that man's been up there talking about changing his way of living and all these things, and hell, here's a man wanting to make love here. And it just scared the fire out of me. And I backed away from Harry, too, I'll tell you that. But me and him's good friends today, and we laugh about that thing. And I know I love Harry today, and I know he loves me. But another fellow walked over, and he said, "You're sick, aren't you, boy?" And I said, "Man, you don't know." He said, "Yes, I do. And if you want to get well, you stay here with us, and we'll tell you how to do it." And he said, "Do you have $4.50? He didn't ask me if it's to hold or what. And I said, "You man, yeah, I got plenty of money." He said, "Go over and buy you a big book. It might be the best investment you ever made in your life." And I believe today it is. I went over and I bought that big book, and I was just tickled to death. I'd met a bunch of people I liked. I had me a big book, you know, and I felt like I belonged to something. And so I started home that night, and I got to thinking, my God, I can't go home and tell my wife and three kids that I'm an alcoholic and I joined this outfit. And, you know, this fear come back. And so I didn't. I went home and I dropped that big book in the clothes hamper. And I went on and didn't know it, you know. They wasn't expecting me for at least two weeks. I wasn't one of these fellas that stayed at home when I drank, I tell you. But when they all went to bed, I went in and got that big book out, and I started reading it in the bathroom. I do a lot of things. I do a lot of praying in my bathroom. And I couldn't put it down. I started reading on the front of the big book, and I couldn't put it down. And you know, I identified with that big book. My God, it told all about it, and you know, what I was and who I was and how I could do something about the problems I had. And so I think, you know, in that my home group, they used to give a man, some whole drunk would wobble in there, and they'd give him a big book and say, "Read the fifth chapter five times now, and then start reading the book." I said, "My God, if they didn't want to read it five times, the fifth chapter, they'd put it in front of the book five times." There ain't nothing wrong with the way our books wrote, folks. I can tell you that. Wrote just exactly the way it's supposed to be. And so I started studying, and I started going to AA meetings and things. I didn't tell my wife where I was going. I was just going. But I was sober, and I was happy. And then after 3 weeks, one night, she told you about that yesterday, she said she was going. See, this guy that took me to my first meeting, he wasn't my sponsor. He went late, and he got the meetings after it started, quick as they'd say amen, and he was gone. So I didn't have no sponsor. Sort of went in the back door of it, and everybody that come in the program talked about their sponsor and how important he was. And that night she said, "I'm going to a meeting with you." And on the way over there, I said, "Damn, if I ain't going to get me a sponsor tonight, I'm needing one. I found a bunch of people I'm happy with, and things are going good, and I'm staying sober. And here she is." I didn't tell her this. I said, "Here she's going over there, and she'll screw the whole thing up." So that night I got to... I got over there to the meeting that night, and they asked for announcements, and I raised my hand. And they said, "Go ahead." And I said, "I want to announce I want my sponsor." And everybody laughed. And I thought, well, I done said something wrong here. And they said, "Well, you pick out somebody. If you don't have a sponsor, you pick out somebody in this room you like. You like the way they work in their program, and ask them to help you with it." And said, "They will." And so I'd been sitting with this guy every time and said, "We're going to give you some advice. Be sure that he's got at least a year of sobriety. For somebody who's been sober 3 weeks, the two of you get together, you might end up drunk out there." And I think that was some good advice they gave me. So I was sitting with this fella, and I punched him. I liked him. And he's the one that told me to get the big book. And I said, "Would you help me with the program?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "We'll talk after the meeting." And you know, you can't wait an hour to find out how long a man's been sober. And I punched him again. And I said, "Wilson, how long have you been sober?" He said, "Buck, I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing for 25 and a half years." I said, "Well, man, you'll do that." He's been good for me. We went out and we talked that night about the steps of the program, the first three steps, and we went through those. And I was trying to think. His wife, I want to say that, his wife has meant a lot to me in my sobriety. You know, every time I go there, she'd say, "Don't work too hard." She didn't have to worry about that. "Don't get hungry." Always kept candy and cookies and things there. And, you know, it's a family deal. And thank God for that. But this is a man that I depended on. And for the first year, he was my sponsor. I was in touch with him. We were either going to meetings together every day. I was at his house or he was at my house. It wasn't none of that, "I'll see you next Friday night." Now, brother, he come to see me and I went to see him. And this was good. And we grew a friendship over the years that wouldn't take anything for him. In August, was a year ago, he moved, this coming August will be 2 years, he moved back to Ohio. He's 85 years old. Still hadn't had a drink of liquor in 44 years. And I found out how if you want to get 44 years sobriety, don't die and don't take a drink. My God, you'll make it. You'll make it. I won't never make it, but I won't live that long. But he said that's the way you do it. Just don't drink and don't die. But I went up to see him back in November and spent some time with him. And if you got your first sponsor, enjoy him and just work the devil out of him. For you'll never get another one like him. That's for sure. But things in our house begin to get better. We got our three children are very involved in the program. And Virginia, she's been active. She's really been active in the program since she come in. She's got her program and I got mine, and I try to leave hers alone. And she knows not to mess with mine. And it works good. It works good. But the day that I walked in, I'm going to close it off here in a few minutes, but the day that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that my life was unmanageable. There was no question about the first step. You know, a lot of people say they know they're an alcoholic, but they don't think their life's unmanageable. My God, I could look back at my record, I'd have been a damn idiot to think that something wasn't wrong with me. And so I knew, and I believed, as I said, I always believed that there was a God. Today I know there is a God. I know that. And I come to believe in this program. And I knew that I could be restored, that God could do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And that night down in the woods, when I got down on my knees and I prayed to a God that I knew about and asked Him to help me straighten my life out, things changed for me that night. I made that decision that night to turn my will and my life over to God's care. Not as I understood Him then. It was I knew about God, but I made a decision. I needed some help. And this power, greater than myself, come into my life that night. And things have changed from that day to today. And you know, for a man that drank every day like I did, and just to quit drinking and not die, somebody had to take care of me. And the compulsion to drink was removed from me that day and has never returned till this day. And God, have I ever got anything to be grateful for? I know here a while back there's a fellow down in the treatment center, a good doctor. And they called me and asked me to come down and talk to him. And I went down there, and the poor man, he hadn't been there for 3 days, and he was crying, wanting a drink of liquor. And so I said, well, I'll see if I can't fix you up one. And so I went out and I told the nurse, I said, this man's going in bad shape. She said, Buck, he's been here 3 days and said he's already had all the liquor he's going to get. And I walked back out and told him about it. And I broke the bad news that he just done had all the liquor he was going to get. And he stood there and cried and tears dropping down on that floor. And I thought, my God, how lucky I am. You know, and that's one man I'd give a drink of liquor if I'd had it that night. How lucky I am that this compulsion and desire to drink was removed from me. And so I went to work on the steps. And I know I just got a couple of minutes, but I want to run right through the way they worked for me. And I went through my fourth step, and I wrote it down, and I've done it 3 times. And if I ever feel necessary, I'll do it again. But I was comfortable with the last fourth step that I wrote down. And when I finished that, when I come in the program, I was always afraid that I won't never do a fifth step. I'd heard people say, I'll never tell this, I'll never tell that. You know, when I finished my fourth step, I think I had a compulsion that I wanted to do my fifth step. This I wanted to get rid of right then. The book directs us exactly how to do these things. So I went and talked to some people, and finally I got an old Presbyterian preacher, and he said, Buck, I'm not an alcoholic. I liked him, though, and he said, do you have any literature? And I said, we've got the best. I give him a big book. He took it home, and he come back. He read the big book and studied, and he come back. He says, do you have your four-step reading? And I said, I sure do. He said, let me have it. I never have had nobody just say it, walk up and hand me theirs and say, go ahead and study this thing. Oh, but he took mine. And we went back, and we spent the evening that day together. And this was a man that I see regular now, on a regular basis. He's worked with a lot of drunks since then. And he's been on the board of alcohol and drug abuse, and he just loves an alcoholic. And that night he started leaving. I told him, I said, "Preacher, you know," and he shared a whole lot with me. I said, "There ain't a hell of a lot of difference between me and you, except I drank liquor. You done a lot of these little things too." But and we're good friends today. Thank God for him. And I got to the sixth step, and I really wanted some of my defects removed. I said, "Some of them, you hear that now." And some of them wasn't too bad. But the day that I become ready and willing, and I think if we don't have them removed, I don't mean we remove them, if we don't have them removed, we'll drink again. For some of these things that started bothering me and I thought wasn't too bad, and my sponsor told me, he said, "You know, if you got wart on this side, wart here, and one on your nose, which one are you going to have removed?" "Well, you want them all gone." He said, "Ask God to remove them all. When you become ready and willing and humbly ask God, they will be removed." And looking back, it's kind of like quitting drinking liquor. I didn't know I didn't want to drink liquor. I've been sober 3 months. And looking back, and I decided then, you know what, I was ready and I was willing, and I humbly asked God to remove them. And looking back, they were gone. So God done for me what I couldn't do for myself. I know that. And so I had a list of the people that, you know, I had harmed and that the ones that I need to make some amends to. And the hardest amends I ever made was to my wife and children. And you know, I know today that all we have to do, and if there's anybody in the, right where I was when I was needing to do this, don't hesitate and put it off. But it was accepted. Most of my amends were. I had one old boy, and finally it was. But I went back to see him, and he said, "I don't give a damn if you don't never speak to me again." And this was a fellow that we had been real close to at one time. And then we both ended up drunk and got in a fist fight, and I took his gun away from him. He got mad at me about it. And so he told me, and then one day me and my two brothers was back down this little town in South Carolina, and we was going to the cafeteria. And he hollered to me. Now, 2 years had passed on this. And he said, "Come over here, I want to talk to you." And I thought, "The heck with you, I done tried to make amends." You know who I'm talking about. So we went ahead and went through the line and went over and sat down with him, and he accepted my amends then, and he said he was glad that I wasn't drinking. But that was the only one I had trouble with. You know, if you go to pay your little old bills, if you pay an old man $15, he'll give you $5 of it back just to get that 10. So them the kind of that ain't the kind of amends I'm talking about that's hard to make. And I had some big deals that, not a big deal for me, might not have been for nobody else, but for me, that last restaurant I run down there and closed up. So, hell, I didn't make no money, and I never did pay the plumber. You know, I didn't figure if I ain't make nothing, he'd need nothing. And so, but I had this on my list when I was making some amends. And this fellow said, "Well, what you going to do about this?" I said, "Oh, that's 14 years ago. I just forgot about that." He said, "You ain't forgot about it or you wouldn't have it down here." That made sense to me then, you know. He said, "And I'm going to tell you something else. According to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous book," now he wasn't an alcoholic, you understand that? "According to this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if this thing starts bothering you and you don't do something about it, you'll drink again." He didn't say you might drink again. He says you'll drink again. Now that puts a different light on it. And it never had bothered me till then. And I'd been doing my 10th step, and I'd put my little head down on the pillow at night and thank God for a good day of sobriety and everything going all right. And all at once he'd say, "Have you paid the plumber?" Now damn Pat won't drive you crazy. And I'll guarantee you, you'll pay the plumber or you'll drink again. And But God, as I understand it, gave me time to get things straightened out in my life where I was able to go take care of this plumber. I went back and I paid this plumber, and he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. He said, 14 years has passed. I didn't tell him I was in AA, and I just told him I'd come back wanting to pay. And he said, "My God, what's happened?" I said, "Well, I left here. I owed you some money." He said, "Well, I knew you was in a little bit of trouble when you left here." God, he didn't know nothing. He said, "I don't even know what it is." So throw them in voices way 10 years ago. I said, "Well, I know what it is. You know, I hear people around AA say, 'Oh, I owe this, I owe that.' Don't know what it was. Damn, if I don't know, I knew every penny I owed. And I don't forget these things. I knew exactly what I owed him. And I told him, he said, 'If it make you feel better, okay.' I said, 'It would.' I paid him. And then later on, I told him I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. and was sober. And, you know, I didn't have to tell him that, for he'd seen me fumble around that town for years. And so the amends I got made, and today my life is pretty well open book. I don't have this fear to run and hide and keep things from others. It's pretty well open today. And I look my day over. I think my 10th step is as important to me as breathing is. For if I don't use my 10th step daily, start putting it off a week, I never was one that could ever go back and do anything over again. If I put it off a few days, I'll be back at step one, I'm afraid. So I do my daily inventory. And I'm always grateful and thank God for another day of sobriety. And I know about prayer. You know, like I told them yesterday, I pray a whole lot better when I'm in trouble. But I seek the knowledge of God's will for me and ask for the power to carry it out. And it's a beautiful program, and it's a happy step for me. And I have tried to work the 12 steps, carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We kept the answering switchboard there in our place for 3 years and made 12-step calls. Back in the early 70s, I knew every drunk that was coming in the program, and this was good. You know, you get to know them. You either talk to them or get them a 12-step or meet them at a meeting. I met a fellow the other day that I met about 12 years ago. He's sober now 5 years, and he said, I talked to him at the hotel out at the airport there. He wouldn't let me come see him. But he said, I remember talking to you on the telephone. And today he's sober. Not that I had a good thing to do with it, but that's the way that God directed this fellow to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. And our little granddaughter, you know, they're grandparents now, and that's a great thing. She's 8 years old. And I'm going to tell this and sit down. But when she was about 3 years old, she said, Pop, I want to go to a meeting with you tonight. And I said, Rachel, you can't go to AA meeting with me. I said, you have to sit still. You be quiet. You can't move around. She said, well, that's all right, Pop. I will. I said, okay. And her mother said, boy, you're taking on a job. I said, okay. If we get in trouble, I'll bring her home. So we get over the meeting. I got up on the front row where there wouldn't be nobody in front of her to pick at. And she sat there through that meeting and didn't say a word. Just as quiet as she could be and listen. And when the meeting was over, the girls got her some cookies and cokes and told her how good she was. And on the way home, I said, Rachel, you done real good tonight. I'm proud of you. She said, well, when we get home, I want you to tell my mama about that. And I said, okay. She was wanting to go some more. So I got home, told her mama, and she started going to Al-Anon meetings and open AA meetings with us. And she's just sort of a little honorary member of the group that we can go to. And so Christmas a year ago, her mother was going shopping. And I said, Rachel, why don't you stay here at the house with me while your mother does her shopping? And she said, okay, I will. So her mother left, and she said, Pop, let's have a meeting. I said, what kind of meeting, Rachel? She said, oh, AA meeting. And I said, okay. So she gets a little pretend mic stand over there, and she said, now you have to talk in this, and we'll pretend this room is full. And she said, now you tell them who you are. And I said, my name's Buck. She said, are you alcoholic? And I said, yeah. She said, well, you have to tell them that, Pop. And so I done this, and she liked the meeting going through, and she just loved the chips. And she said, now I want you to offer the chips. And I said, white chips for the beginner, red chips 3 months, and went through the deal. I said, anybody for a white chip? Now, how about the red chip? She said, wait a minute, Pop. Here comes a lady to get a white chip. Greatest imagination you have ever seen. And so somebody got each one of the chips. I said, I have to kiss a lady. She said, well, that's all right. And so she takes the mic back. She said, now we close this meeting. We pray. We have to pray. And after we pray, if you want refreshments, you go in the kitchen. And if you don't, just go on home. And I said, my golly, she's listening closer than some of us adult drunks do. And she could really run a meeting. Thank you and the committee for having me here. It's been a beautiful weekend. And you know, God is here. The little chapel over on the other end. A closeness in here that I never did have that feeling. The little church that I was in down in the country, but I thought that's the only place God was. He's over there and he's over here and he's in every one of us. It's a good feeling. thank God for you and thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love you all.